News from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. We're going to talk about gardening with a couple of our favorite gardeners, our favorite guests. Diane Nolan and Chuck White are here, and they're raring to go. They are so raring to go. So stay tuned.
Thank you, Celeste.
Okay. First, though, we've got to go to Pledge Central and talk to one of our favorite bosses, Jay Pierce.
What are you bucking up for here?
We're having some fun.
What are you angling toward?
Well, I'm just in a great mood today. These guys have they've boosted my spirits.
Hey, I am, and I'm in a great mood, too, because Ed Kieser says tonight's going to be the last frost.
Yeah.
And so this weekend is going to be it. What a timely show today.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I have two meetings, so I'm going to miss it live. But you know what? Fortunately, we archive these on our website, so it's kind of like TiVo radio. And I'll be able to listen to this later today and be ready for this weekend. So there you be.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the mission at hand right now is to get you to call 217-244-9455. Support information programs like this, the dialogue you get to participate in throughout the year on the Afternoon Magazine. This is a unique program. I would urge you, as you travel around the country, to spin the dial, listen to other public radio stations, listen to other radio stations in various communities, and then come back and give that little comparison test and say, how does WILL stack up? Well, a lot of people who do travel around come back and say, boy, I really missed you guys. I didn't get to call in on the Afternoon Magazine. I missed Focus 580. I didn't get the kind of news that I'm used to hearing. 217-244-9455 is what makes it happen. It's only possible with your support for us to bring you programs like the one you're going to listen to today. Useful information, very timely. Ed says it's over after tonight. You can put the plants out. So this weekend, I predict this weekend, you might want to go Friday. Take the day off Friday and get out to buy
get
your
to the
plants
gardening center.
Because I'm guaranteeing you Saturday, there are going to be some traffic jams. Well, let's get the phones jammed right now at 244-9455. And, you know, Celeste, if you make a contribution of $40 or more, you become what is known as a friend of WILL. We have a very special opportunity for you right now to become a partner in this mission, to be a radio station that's of real value in the community. And when you make your contribution, you are having a direct impact on the quality of life in and around Champaign-Urbana or whatever community you live in and listen to us.
And we've got the Afternoon Magazine special combo available this afternoon, if you call in with a gift of $100 or more.
Right. You can select as your thank you gift the special combo, and Celeste and the producer of the Afternoon Magazine, Harriet Williamson, will select two books from the Afternoon Magazine library, and you'll get a WILL stainless steel travel mug. And because it's over $75, you'll also get the WILL member card. How can you beat that package? And you're supporting the program you're about to hear. 244-9455. This is the way it works. Let's get your participation right now. We're over $50,000, Celeste, so that means we're a third of our way toward our overall goal for this week.
Okay, very good. 217-244-9455, the number to call with a pledge of financial support. And to those who have joined us so far this week, thank you very much. Well, now let's bring in our gardeners. Diane Nolan and Chuck Voigt, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. We thought we were the special combo for a minute.
Yeah, I was
hoping. Well, you
it.
Are a special combo, aren't you?
Well, yes. That's one way of putting it. Yeah.
Dynamic duo.
How special.
If you would like to talk with Diane and Chuck, well, give us a phone call this afternoon. Join us here on the air. The number to join the program this afternoon and talk with Diane and Chuck, 333 3333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL. Outside the local dialing area, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Very quickly, Diane teaches in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois, and she's the co-author with Kristen Bolin of Perennials for the Landscape. She's also the host of Illinois Gardener on our companion station, WILL-TV. Chuck Voigt is State Vegetable and Herb Extension Specialist in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. He is the co-author with J.S. Vandermark of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. Well, we've already got a listener ready to talk with you, too. Let's go and talk with our caller on a cell phone, line one. Go ahead.
Hello. I planted seeds. The package just said plant after frost. So am I going to need to replant those? Or do you think they're going to come up anyway? I planted them about a week ago.
What type of seeds did you plant?
They're all perennials, a lot of Shasta daisies and those kinds of things.
They'll be fine. They're okay in the ground now, so they might have gotten the little top leaves. If they had come up, they might have had the little top leaves frosted, but no, the seeds will be fine.
Okay. Thanks very much.
A lot of times they look at the soil temperature, and I think that's why. So we've had some warm temperatures, so the soil didn't really drop that. Would you say, Chuck, I don't think it dropped that quickly.
No. In fact, my asparagus is continuing to grow because the soil is actually warmer than the air, and it pushes it out of the ground faster than you'd expect on these cold days.
Mm. So it's a backwards year.
It's like a flywheel effect where it stays cold longer, but then once it warms up, it's slower to cool down again.
That's right.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Hello. Two questions, a clematis question and a dandelion question. I bought a house 2 years ago, beautiful clematis on a trellis in front. It bloomed wonderfully 2 years in a row. And this year, someone told me you should cut it back. I was doing it at the wrong time. I started pulling away the old dead vines, which I had left the 2 years before, and found that there was green stuff in them. Now that it's starting to look like it's going to bloom, it's not the same. So I want some good advice on when, if it needs to be cut back, and what to do in the meantime. Also, is there a way to get rid of dandelions without chemicals?
Okay, I'll take the clematis question, Chuck. There are two ways that clematis flower, and you have to notice on your vine which way they'll flower. Some, like the sweet autumn, will flower from new growth, and they will come up from the roots and flower from new growth. Others will have their breaks will come from the old growth, and they'll break all the way up the vine. And so you probably had one that was going to flower on older growth. It would break wherever you wanted it, you know, wherever it would break on the vine. And so for that type, let yours go ahead and do its thing, and it will build back up to where it was before you trimmed it, and then just trim it to shape.
Okay.
Most of the time, you don't have to do much on those. But the other ones, the fall clematis especially, it just gets unruly if you just don't take it down to the ground. So just notice that, you know, it's going to grow, and then it's going to grow taller the next year. And just trim it when it's going somewhere you don't want it to, or if it's just reroute it if it's growing someplace that you don't want it to. But you probably didn't need to trim it too much.
Oh, one more thing. I'd love to have two of these. Is it easy to, take a cutting and move it, you know, to a new place, or is that a kind of a hard thing?
You could certainly try. I think they're very hard to divide.
Okay.
They're usually a single clump. I've had them good
since
success.
They're a vine, they might be something that would layer.
Yes, that's true. And to layer, that means you would wound part, in between the two branches, and you wound it on the underneath side and just place it down into either a pot of soil that's loose and moist, or you actually lay it down into the soil, you know, just bring the vine off and lay it down into the ground with the wound touching the soil, and then cover it with mulch and keep it moist. The layering might work. And then, of course, cuttings, too. But layering, it doesn't sever from the mother plant, so it's still getting, half of the branch is still getting all of the nutrients through the phloem.
Right. And a vine is a natural to do it with because they, if they don't have something to climb on, they'll lay on the ground anyway.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And the dandelion question goes to Chuck.
I was hoping he'd forget.
Good job, Celeste.
I felt like I'm the host of Jeopardy here this afternoon.
Is he still here?
Well, he'll listen off the air.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask him a question, he's gone. It depends where they are. Obviously, if they're in open ground, you can tillage, and some things might hold them back. Usually, where people get annoyed is when they're growing in the lawn. A non-chemical control. Physically dig out as many of them as you can, and then build up the turf so that it's so thick that the seeds can't find a spot to come back through, and just dig them regularly.
Those little narrow dandelion tine things. Yeah. I break one every. I get one in May, and I've broken it, within 2-3 weeks because. I guess I have a lot of those yellow flowers.
I just kind of give up on doing away with them, and mine has been safe for years and years and years.
Well, hey, can I borrow it?
I don't think so.
For me, it's in the perennials. I don't want them coming up in the irises. Yeah. That's really, the iris rhizome actually will cover up, and the dandelion will almost be protected from being weeded, so... It's in the flower beds. I really don't want them.
Yeah. Let's take another call. A listener in Indiana, line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
I was listening to that dandelion thing. I use it as an exercise procedure.
Good.
But eventually I'm going to, going to be able to be leaning over and popping up like I did. So I was interested in what you said.
Well, now you can just lay on the ground.
Yeah.
Or kneel.
If I can, I have a question I'd like to ask another along with it now, especially about the dandelions. My question I wanted to ask was that I have a place of rent, and during the winter the leaves blow off a number of trees in the neighborhood, and they block up against a fence that's sort of like the old-time chicken fences. There's a fair amount of space in between the wires. Some of them blow through, some of them don't, but the time they get raked up in the spring, they're creating a little bear pattern, but I've got like 30 feet that's maybe 4 or 5 inches wide. That's basically no grass, and other things go there. And I was wondering, first I thought about wildflowers, then I thought, well, there may be just some perennial or something that looks good and will grow under the conditions, essentially at the edge of a lawn with a fence as the sort of the backdrop. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
What directions does the fence run?
I got them everywhere, but the main one, let's say it faces north and south. It's really more, more like north-north, north-northwest by, that way. But it's basically north-south. So they collect on the north side of a fence.
And it's just a 4-inch or
6-inch?
Yeah,
that's not much more than that.
That's a difficult...
It's very peculiar, I look at it.
Small space.
So about running carrots down or something.
There you go.
But I want something that that can take the, with the leaves will pile up, especially when we have good snows and stuff. It gets cold. And so I want something, can handle that sort of thing if that's a distinction that's necessary.
Well, I'm not sure anything that's going to stay that narrow. Is what I first thought Siberian irises, but they're eventually going to.
But I can control them, can I?
Yes.
Without doing serious damage to them.
Well, I don't like to think of it as control.
I mean, if they come towards lawn,
no, there's no problem.
I'm going to get in, from another person, and say that was not a good experiment.
No.
They may be gone in the morning when
they're not at all weedy, but they would need more room to spread than that. So you may actually want to. Increase that space to at least a foot. 4 inches is very, very narrow.
Okay. Is there some kind of climbing vine that, would just sort of...
Absolutely.
What would be a good one that's hardy or whatever?
Well, we went into the clematis, or clematis, some people say. Those are quite...
What you were just talking about earlier.
Exactly.
The clematis?
Uh-huh. Jackmanii is a very tried and true, the deep purple. That's the first one I ever saw, but there's probably 24 types.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got quite a bit of space, I've actually grown golden hops, which is quite a grower, a spreader, but it doesn't...
Oh, yeah. We had that in the yard at one point.
Yeah. And it, nice it really plant. Fills
I'm
in.
I'm at the time of the year where if I, I'm not...
This is a perfect time to get those started.
Yeah. See, I'm not... Last time I did any gardening, I was a little kid trying to impress my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And... So all I thought of is, I'm just basically get a triangular shaped thing or a V-shaped thing, draw a couple lines, throw in some seeds, walk by, scuffing the dirt in, and let it go.
Well, now you're going to be more sophisticated. You're going to have this great fence, and you'll have these vines growing up. And
but the clematis can do all that. You know, I'm not up to be.
And it won't fill a huge area, and each one will fill a different space. The golden hops filling more.
Mm-hmm.
Climbing roses.
Okay.
You know, you could have those, and they take this. You know, they would take sun. But this fence, they will grow up enough they would get the sun, wouldn't you say?
One autumn clematis would eventually cover the entire fence.
And I don't know if you want to do
that. No matter how long
it is. I can cut it back or anything. This is not, you know, nobody's driving by. And
the autumn clematis will seed in, and you will get others, other places. But it's probably the most assertive, if not aggressive.
With the dandelion, I just thought, want to know if this is true. It's really yellow. Okay, then I see the next plant the next day or sometime, and it's closed. Then I go back, and it seems to be open. Is it when they get fertilized, do they close up, then reopen, and all of a sudden there are those nice airborne seeds that we see? Is that how the dandelion does its reproduction?
Yeah, they're open and yellow and get pollinated.
Yeah.
And
then they close.
And then
they close.
Then they close.
Yeah.
And then the seeds grow and mature. And when the seeds are ready, then it opens up and the puff dries out and the wind carries them.
Yeah. So I'm getting the whole reproductive cycle of my backyard in various places. I just wanted to check on that because I just been exercising clipping the yellows. You know. Then I saw this one thing I thought was I had missed it on the other side of the fence, and it was closed, but it was sort of had the white stuff at the end of it, and I thought, that's what's going on. So that's
The yellow ones actually don't, aren't yet problematic. It's those puffy ones that are ready to.
Thanks for the time.
Sure. Thanks for the call. Yeah, if you catch them. If you don't have time to do anything else but go out there and rip those little yellow heads off, I suppose you're ahead of the game a little bit, huh?
And really, people who have small children that are always making bouquets, those sweet kids are helping out.
Yeah.
See if you like butter. Isn't that what we always said?
Hold it under your chin.
Yeah. And you always do.
Who doesn't like butter? Let's talk with another listener, caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. Just parenthetically, when our kids were little, we used to give our kids a penny for each dandelion flower they picked. But if any of them went to seed, they lost 5 cents.
Whoa.
So they could be out there every day.
Now, would you give a dime for the root? You know,
that was a while ago. Yeah, I don't think we would have gotten anything.
That's cute.
The reason I'm calling more vine questions, how old or how long do you have to have planted a wisteria before it flowers? I planted this thing, I think it was like 5 years ago, and I've trimmed it, I've fertilized, it's watered, it's cancerous, and never a single flower. Do I have to wait another 30 years?
Well, I have heard him banter about 5 to 7 years, but that makes me wonder if it's a good, one.
If it was a cultivar to begin with, or if it's just a seedling that can take almost forever.
Oh, well, I don't know. Well, I planted it as a potted plant that I bought from the nursery.
Right.
Could it be that somebody screwed me?
Well, I would wait till 7 years to be able to say that.
7 years after I planted it or until it's 7 years old?
It should be when it is 7 years old. It's not really from when you planted it, so it may have a year in the nursery.
Yeah, it was certainly at least a year old.
But I've seen small ones with flowers on them, too. So,
really?
Some of the cultivars, yes.
Well, that's discouraging.
Yes.
But
you're not alone.
Good engine diameter.
Yeah. But you are not alone. We hear this question a lot.
Okay.
So, but I would give it, do you root for any of the local sports teams like Cubs or Cards? I mean, wait till next year. We always want to say
that. Cowboys just as bad.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's give the phone numbers here, because at the moment no one is waiting to talk with Chuck.
Can I talk
Diane.
About frost?
You may.
We almost always say Mother's Day before you set out your tender annuals. And tomatoes, they like it tropical. I wait until after school is out. That just happens to be when I have time.
Okay.
And some schools get out third week of May, and some get out closer to June. But But it is for a reason. And I remember the latest frost that I can remember was May 22nd. And I remember that because I was giving a talk at the Illini Union and it had frosted the night before. And so when it's a nice 80-degree day in April, you just got to rein it in. You can buy it, but then you're going to be watering it. So my bay window is filled. My living room has a row of flats in it. I just haven't planted anything, but I have purchased. Do you want to add to those words of wisdom about frost?
Yeah. My frostiest memory was on May 24th, and mm-hmm. it actually froze a crust on the ground that night. I had potatoes that were over a foot tall. It was devastating. But, you know, when people start saying, oh, the average last frost date is April 15th here, I just shake my head and wonder what they're talking about.
That's an average, 50% though. Chance.
Right.
Yeah, because
it goes up to 100%.
It used to be like May 10th, and I don't know how it got shifted back to April 15th because this happens more often than not, what we saw the last couple of nights. So don't buy basil until Memorial Day. And don't put out peppers and tomatoes until about the 15th. Yeah. It would be the safe way to go.
But in the meantime, there are some things you can get out there and get
in. Oh, pansies and snapdragons. Perennials that are properly hardened off, you know, from the greenhouse to outdoor conditions, it won't hurt perennials. And, you know, some of them might get, I've seen some frost nipping on my fall anemone that are established. So it won't hurt them, but it just disfigures the leaves, a few of them. But you can get perennials. And, of course, I've planted trees already.
Oh, great time to plant trees.
So you don't have to worry about the trees and established perennials and even newer ones. But, boy, the tender things just don't do it, and especially tomatoes. You know, because you'll have to hover around it and build campfires. You know, it's too much effort. Although I did tell several friends all past week that they are supporting the industry.
There you go. Well, I walk past, you know, grocery store where they have some of these plants already in stock, and I'm telling you, they're not looking real good on the shelf out there at the moment. So,
well, and if you see the field crops, the corn is yellow. It'll do fine, but it's the same with some of these early tender things. Don't do it. Self-control.
If you got a plant that really likes it, hot and sunny, hold off.
It'll just sit.
Right. Concentrate on cool weather stuff in what should be cool weather.
Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, lettuce,
onions,
radishes,
peas, all those things. Although we're starting to get a little late to be planting those things, but it's wonderful weather for them. They're much happier with this than they would have been had it stayed 84 degrees.
Yeah.
So there's quite a few things we can do. You just have to remind yourself every year, especially when it's 80 degrees in April.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make you feel like you're a month behind when it suddenly it's 80 degrees and oh my gosh, I don't have my cool weather stuff done and it's warm.
And then you remember
frost
in the third week of May, and then you can relax.
Yeah.
Let's talk with some more listeners. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt, our guests this afternoon. We're talking about gardening. Next, we go to a listener in Chicago, line 4. Hi there.
Here we go at the supermarket again. When you buy potting soil in a supermarket, is that... I bought some and I transplanted some Sansevieria and they all died on me. Is the quality of that stuff up to par, or is it just so-so?
Some of the cheap stuff is really terrible, to be perfectly honest. A lot of the cheap mixes will use a lot of sedge peat, which is black and sticky and doesn't hold nutrients and holds moisture too well.
But I would think Sansevieria would be able to take it, but still.
Well, the only way to kill a Sansevieria, though, is to overwater it. So if you get something that stays too soggy, that would be bad.
Oh, I see. Can you read the ingredients on the bag of soil?
Yeah, look for sphagnum peat, not just peat or generic peat, whether try to get around the fact that it's just dug out of fields in Michigan that are kind of black and nasty.
And you'd want some aerator like perlite. Vermiculite's really a seed-starting moisture-holding, but you'd want to look for something that's going to aerate bark or perlite.
perlite, not vermiculite.
Vermiculite usually is what you put over seeds, and it holds more moisture.
Right. If it's in a pot too long, it tends to get kind of slimy in a pot.
I see. How about an aloe vera? What would you use for that?
I'd use a Sandy mix for an aloe vera.
Sandy, because they're on sale right now at the Jewel in Chicago.
Oh, they're great. I always have aloes on my windowsill.
And how often do you water them?
I usually do it to touch, but it ends up being about once a week.
Once a week. That's indoors.
That's indoors.
And again, it's going to make a big difference what growing medium you have them in. If it's one that has peat and stuff in it that's going to hold moisture, then you're going to lengthen out the time between waterings. And if you have something sandy that where it just kind of drops right through, you'd have to do it more frequently.
But the perlite work with the sansevieria help?
It would give good aeration to the roots.
Good aeration. All right, then, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign, Line 1. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you answer a fruit tree question?
Probably.
Okay. We just planted some fruit trees, and they were blossoming profusely earlier on this year. And I was wondering, they look too weak to hold much fruit. I'm wondering if we should pick off any fruit that develops until they get a little sturdier.
Wow. Most people don't have that kind of fortitude. It might be a good idea if they're so fragile looking that it looks like it might break them up. Okay. You might.
You could thin
or just thin it down and see what happens if it starts to be too bad. Sometimes having a fruit here and there weights down the branches and actually opens up the tree kind of nicely. So you're looking at the plant, so you have a better judge of it than I do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks like it'll hold something, but my parents' peach trees and stuff, I've seen them split right down the middle.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah. Peaches tend, especially if they're not pruned really heavily, tend to put on about four times as much fruit as they can really mature to any good degree.
Uh-huh. In a case like that, would you thin those? In general.
Yeah, definitely thin them. Wait till we get into the early part of June so the June drop is over. Any that didn't get pollinated well enough will fall off at that point. And then once you're past that point, you can thin them out. I think what peaches are supposed to be like 4 to 6 inches apart on a branch. Apples further, some things like apricots can be a little closer than that.
All right.
Plums, too.
Plums, yeah, a little closer than that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. If you'd like to talk with gardeners, Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Have a spot where we just put some clematis or clematis in it. I have something there that underneath in that area that I want to get rid of. I don't care for it. And I'm thinking what would be good to put at the base of those plants.
Clematis like to have shaded roots.
Right. And cool feet. Right.
So, I mean, it depends on how tall you want it to be, but Shasta daisies could go in there where it comes up. There's not a big base, but the leaf comes out nicely. I've seen people use hardy geraniums if you want it to be lower. You really can put anything. I've got Mugo pines in front of some of mine, and so it can be shrubs or it can be herbaceous plants. But if it's bulbs, then those bulbs are gone
right
at the hottest part of the year.
Right.
So you do want a summer perennial or a fall. Asters would work fine, even fall moms. But they do like to have a little bit of shading.
Right. They like the sun on their leaves and the vine, but they like to
shade
be cool.
Mm-hmm. And the roots need to be cooler. I got to talk about this really assertive, well, it's a nice grower, Shasta Daisy, and it's the perennial plant of the year from a couple years back, Becky. And Becky is, you know, she's a nice 2.5 foot high, bigger white daisy flower. I talk her like she's my good friend.
Yeah.
But it really, she does a very nice job in the garden. And I put it with irises and it really is a pretty plant.
Okay, look into that. Let's talk with another listener. Next, we're going to go to a line one, someone out working on a tractor this afternoon.
Great.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about a lilac bush that I have. I don't know the variety, but it's one that only gets about 2.5 feet tall, and it's globular type of a thing. It bloomed the first year that I got it, and this is the fourth year for it, and it hasn't bloomed since. What am I doing wrong? What do I need to do?
Does it have enough sun? Is it in full sun?
It's on the west side of the house.
Okay, that should be fine.
And so it has sun from noon on.
And which that would be fine.
Do you prune it?
Yes, I have. I've pruned it after the period when I think that it should have bloomed. For instance, I would probably prune it maybe the end of May.
And are you trying to maintain its height? Is that why you're pruning it?
Well, it just seems like it kind of gets overwhelming, gets a lot bigger than I thought it was going to get. I don't know. Should I not be pruning it?
Well, it's fairly easy to cut off the flower buds, which would put it in a cycle where it never blooms.
I would almost let it go.
Let it go for a couple of years and see if it doesn't come back to. And then if it's bigger than you want in the space, then you need to transplant it or replace it or do something else.
Because you probably have a Miss Kim type. You have the shorter one, and they do flower later, but they do get bigger than. I don't know any that stays right at 2 to 3 feet.
Okay.
So you might be pruning those off, and they are lovely. They will just, this Miss Kim, and sometimes there's Syringa Myeri, which is a shorter one, and they will just be covered. It's smaller than the old-fashioned one, not quite as fragrant, but.
That's wonderful.
Extremely floriferous, so I would just not do anything to it. And don't over-fertilize, because that will also promote leaves and keep you from getting flowers.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next, we talk with a listener on line 2, caller in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hi, I called earlier. I hope you don't mind my calling back with a totally different question.
Okay,
not at all.
This is totally theoretical, and you may or may not be able to address it. It has occurred to me that if one has made a mistake and put out some plants or whatever, and frost is coming along that would damage them, I wonder if a person were to turn on a sprinkler that would keep them wet, through the coldest temperatures until it warmed up the next day. Just theoretically speaking, it seems to me like that ought to absorb, basically to keep them warm enough, to keep them above freezing.
That's what commercial strawberry growers, mm-hmm. blueberry growers, orange growers do. When the temperature gets near 32, you turn on the sprinklers, and it has to be on until the temperature gets back above freezing, because the heat that water gives off as it freezes protects them. But as soon as you shut it off, then it just becomes ice, and that's a problem.
Right. So that would work in a home garden.
Probably would if you can get some sort of a spritz that just keeps a little fine spray on them. Versus if you had water running for 12 hours, it would, especially here in Urbana, would waterlog the soil, and you'd probably have more waterlogging problems than if you just covered the plant with something and protected
it
that way.
More
of a mist than
finer.
Okay.
But they actually do that.
I've seen pictures of orange groves where it's been on through the whole night, and they're just encased in ice, and you'd swear that nothing would ever survive, but in fact, that heat of the change of state that they have to give off so that they can crystallize somehow protects them.
Okay, would it be possible, do you think, to compromise, and if you had just a regular lawn sprinkler, but say set it, if you know the temperature, say it's supposed to dip down to 32 or 31 or something, to say turn it on 4 o'clock in the morning or whenever you think it's going to not quite be to the coldest, and leave it on for a few hours so that it wouldn't put out so much water to waterlog the soil.
If you could guess
that'd be
great.
If you think you can outguess the weather, then you got.
I know.
Ed's got some
a temperature sensing water sprinkler.
All right.
And then sell it through this area of the country. and south.
And, all right, I'll make my billions.
And then I want to be on there for,
and,
you know.
And make it of some material that won't freeze.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very
the
much.
Brainstorming. We'll be the two brainstormers that you discussed it with.
Let's talk with another listener. Listener in Aurora, line three. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I have a question about a large ornamental apple tree I have. Usually by July or August, it gets some type of fungus where all the leaves end up falling off. And last year, last summer, I was raking leaves in July, which was very bizarre. So anyway, I got a fungicide that I was told by the extension office to get, and I need to spray the tree, and I think I missed the first. I should have sprayed it while it was budding, but I'm looking at this tree, and it's 50 feet high. I don't know what I need in order to get the tips of the tree covered with this fungicide. Any help?
Some sort of a power sprayer.
And no wind.
Right.
You know, at the time you do it.
Well, you can allow for windage, kind of go upwind and let it drift through the tree.
It's a common fungus. I think crab apples get in a lot of ornamental.
Yeah, apple scab is terrible. Right. There, some of the newer varieties like Prairie Fire have apple scab resistance, but some of the, particularly some of the old ones that come out with red leaves are so susceptible to that they're just it looks like autumn in August, like you say.
Yeah, like what I did also, I thinned the tree a lot. It's about a 30-year-old tree, so I thinned it. In the fall. So I'm hoping, she said also that might give a little more air to the tree and air it out so it won't be so susceptible. But the problem is, I hear a friend of mine said, well, if you have a cedar tree, you might be causing this problem. And I do have a cedar tree nearby. Is that...
Well, cedar apple rust is another leaf disease.
Yeah. That's what I think I have.
And they bounce back and forth. You'll see the orange structure on the cedar and it...
Right, and then you get the round lesions that also look kind of orangish on the leaves. It's not...
It wouldn't defoliate,
it doesn't, though. It makes them ugly, but it doesn't usually knock them off like apple scab does.
Okay, this must be apple scab then.
Well, it could be a combination of the two.
And that would probably,
yeah,
the one-two punch.
They would be weakened early by cedar apple rust, and then when we get into humid evenings particularly, then the apple scab comes in and
whammy.
And really... knocks them down.
So even though it's already bloomed and the leaves are kind of out already, it's not too late to spray the tree.
No, it's got to be better to start now than never to start if you really want control.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Next, we talk with a listener in Terre Haute, line four. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. You may have just answered my question. I didn't hear all of it. I have a Prairie Fire crab tree. And flowering crab, and the bark on it is splitting, and then halfway decent chunks are open or falling off, maybe 2x2.
And is it along one side, or is it
around? It's all around. And it's not everywhere, but it's not just in one spot.
Has it been near... I mean, has it had any trauma, anything that's been near it?
No.
Because it's not lightning, because lightning is on one side, and it would not go to a small tree, I would think, if it hit the largest.
Well, in southwest injury in the winter would be on the southwest side, so that's not that.
Yeah, and it would be on one side.
I've seen other crab trees or flowering crabs that have kind of a split bark to them, but this has got some...
But this is bigger, isn't it?
Yeah. I
mean, it sounds like it's larger chunks.
Yeah. It looks healthy, and it flowers every year, and I noticed it a little bit last year, but now it's gotten a little bit worse.
Would it be anything, is it rodent-related? I mean, would it be animals, or?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I have squirrels in the backyard, but it doesn't look like it's squirrel damage.
Okay.
Have you looked under the dead bark? To see what's going on underneath?
Not with my glasses, no.
Okay.
You might.
Yeah, because...
I've got my glasses on
Because apple trees do occasionally get some borer-type insects that might be working under the bark.
Yeah, it doesn't really look like borer. I mean, I know what borers look like.
Okay.
You may have
stumped us.
Pardon?
You may have stumped us.
What a way to end a day.
one other quick question. I have a dogwood, which I have to, it has dead branches on it that I clean out every year. Is that just a normal part of the dogwood cycle, or might it have some disease?
Well, they would normally shade out some of their lower branches.
Lower and inner branches.
Lower and inner.
That's it, right there.
That's typical. You know, if it was main branches out, you know, there are some diseases that can attack them, but I think that's just normal shedding of interior branch stuff.
It just gives you an opportunity to prune every year, which is so fun. I enjoy pruning, actually, but it's just a natural cycle. I do. I love
Chuck
to prune.
Is shaking his head. Like,
oh, pruning's great.
Yeah. It was so great to have the two of you with us this afternoon. Will you come back soon?
You bet. And it won't be frosty next time.
That's for sure.
We hope.
We hope.
And remember,
maybe we'll see you in
remember
June.
It was Ed who guaranteed that this was the last frost and not us.
Yeah.
Okay.
We hope.
All right. Diane Nolan and Chuck Voigt, our guests this afternoon here in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Thanks, guys. See you later. Well, now we're going to check in with Maeve Riley in Pledge Central. Hi, Maeve.
Hi, Celeste.
Do you enjoy gardening?
Oh, I do, and they've answered so many of my questions.
Good.
And I was one of those fools who put the tomato plants out over the weekend, so I'm running out there with my sheets every night this week, so hopefully they'll last.
Yeah, you know what works pretty good is we've used, we don't have any tomatoes out there yet, but we have some other things we're trying to baby along, and we use the recycling buckets.
Oh, smart idea. Okay.
Yeah, that works pretty well, too.
Okay, well.
Okay, well, back to the business at hand now. We need to raise some money, right?
Right. That's right. We want to get to $57,000 by the end of the day today. And right now we're at $50,539. So we're on our way, but we can only get there if you give us a call at 217-244-9455. I just want to put in a plug for the special thank you gift we have this afternoon.
Okay.
If you call in during the Afternoon Magazine and make a pledge at the $100 level or above, you can request the Afternoon Magazine special combo. Celeste and producer Harriet Williamson will select two books from the Afternoon Magazine library and a WILL stainless steel travel mug. And you can pick that. You can suggest to the volunteers if you'd like fiction or nonfiction, if you're a gardening buff or whatever you're interested in. And Celeste, you and Harriet can try to
match the demand. I do think we might have a couple gardening books in the Afternoon Magazine library that we could send out to somebody who calls in and makes a pledge of financial support to support this public radio station, WILL. The number to reach, Pledge Central, 217-244-9455. And in addition to the Afternoon Magazine special combo, that's what we're calling it this afternoon, with that pledge, you'll also pick up Patterns Magazine, a subscription to that for a year, and that tells you what's on the WILL stations, AM, FM, and television, as well as, how else would you describe it? Maybe it's got articles in there about programs,
right.
About...
what's going on a little bit behind the scenes here. Maybe if we have special events coming up,
right.
Then you're aware of those. So it's kind of a nice way for us to say thank you and keep in contact with you every month, and it's only at the $40 level.
Okay, but anything above
or
that.
Any above, yeah, sorry.
And also, with this Afternoon Magazine special combo, Patterns Magazine,
right,
and the member card.
And the member card, yes, and that's good for 2-for-1 dining at a lot of local restaurants, actually restaurants throughout the whole central Illinois area. And if you're traveling, you can request one from the company that supplies those to us. So also you can get some free entries to attractions and area events. So that pays way after a year,
yeah.
$75. That's really a good bargain there.
Yeah. So that's quite a deal,
mm-hmm.
I would say.
Yes.
I would say that's worth a $100 pledge.
Sure. So call 217-244-9455.
And we accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. And if you want to get in on the Afternoon Magazine special combo, when you call in and talk to one of the volunteers, let them know what your interests are, and we'll do our best to send a couple of books out to you that you will enjoy.
It's 10 minutes before 2 o'clock. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Let's check in now with Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade on this Tuesday afternoon, futures are indeed in, and they were mostly lower across the grains floor. The oil seeds were down just a bit for the day, too. May contract in the wheat down 6.25 today. 315 and a half was the opening price, the low price at 307, the high price out that open at 315 and a half, and their settlement price in the May wheat at 308 and a quarter. Once again, it was down 6.25 on the day. July futures now, 325 the high, low at 315 and a half, settlement at 317 and three quarters, down 5.5 cents. In the Septembers, 333 the high, the low at 324, settlement price at 326. It was down 5.75 for the day. December contract, 343.25 the high, the low at 334, settled at 335.25, down 5.25. And the March wheat, 351 the high, the low at 343, settlement price $3.44.5 in the March wheat, down 4.5 cents. Hey, if you haven't dialed it yet, pick up that phone, 217-244-9455. Pledge your financial support to the radio station you depend on for your agricultural news and information, the marketing programming that is brought to you each and every day by Dave Dickey, myself, and the WILO Radio Station Administration, who has been very kind and generous over time, and we're talking since the very inception of this station, in providing programming slots for ag programming. If it's important to you, if it really makes a difference in your day, it's very easy to call in your pledge of financial support. The number again, 217-244-9455. A couple of pledges under our belt for this afternoon. I know AgriGold is sponsoring a pledge looking for at least 110 and hopefully a lot more than that in the number of folks that call in support of ag programming. If we get 150% of what we did last spring, that's in total numbers, they'll pledge $1,000 to the WILL fund. Also, we're meeting a challenge this afternoon with the folks over at New Market, Indiana, and we'll tell you more about that when we talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. That all coming up during the closing market report today. But the important part here is that you dial in and pledge your financial support to this radio station. The station needs your help. I know oftentimes, and I tell this to the folks at the station, when prices are low, that the farmers are not going to pledge their financial support because they really need it in their back pocket to feed their families, to make sure the operations on their farms are completed. This is one of those years where the burden is across the board. Low prices are here, and the WILL station, the state in general, is suffering some. Cuts across the University of Illinois, and this is across all the university area, is going to be something around 3.5 to 4%. WILL, of course, is in that third or fourth year of cuts from the state. Funding is tight here, and we need you, the agricultural listeners, really to say, this is important to me, important enough that times when they're rough, even here on the farm, are rough there at the University of Illinois. And I know it's the University of Illinois, but we're pretty rough. If you can call in your support now, it will make all the difference in the world. 217-244-9455. I would not send you a line of bull on this one. I am telling the truth on it. Please, it would mean so much to us. 217-244-9455. Thanks for calling in your financial support. It's very important. Now, from the corn pit, that's a tough day to do this on. Down 3.5 cents in the corn. $1.97 was the settlement price in that May contract, and that's a new contract low. As of course, most of you already know, had a high today of $2.75, a low at $1.96¾. Once again, new contract low for the May, $1.97, down 3.5 cents. That's not a new contract low. The July is a new contract low, $2.05, down 4 for the day, $2.08¾ the high, the low at $2.04½, and a settlement price at $2.05. in that July, and it was down 4 cents for the day. September futures settled off 4 at 213, had a high today of 218¼, low at 212¾. December futures 226½, the high, the low at 222½, settlement price there at 223, and they were down 3½ for the day. March contract in the corn pit 234, the high, the low at 230½, settlement price at 230¾. They were off 3½, and the May corn futures for next year 239, the high, the low at 35½, settled on that low at 35.5, down 3.75 for the day. May oats now 137, the high, the low at 34. Settlement price at $1.34. They were down a quarter, and July oats were unchanged, 138.25 the settlement price, with a high of 41 and a low at 38 for the day. From the soy complex now, nearby May beans 624, the high, the low at 614. Settlement price at 618.75. They were down a half on the day. And the July futures were off a penny and three quarters, 625.5 the settlement price. It's 630.5 high, low at 620. Once again, July being 625.5 down a penny and three quarters. Nearby August contract, 630.5 the high, the low at 620. Old crop, August, 625.5 down a quarter. And the September, 626.5 the high. Low at 615.5, settlement price at 620.5, down 2. November futures, 624.75, the high, the low at 614, and a settlement price at 619.25 in the bean pit. They were off 2.75 in January soybeans, 626.5, the high, the low at 617. Settled $6.20.5. They were down 2.25. May bean meal for the day, 196.20. The high, the low at 191.80. Settled 192.40. They were down 2.60 on the day. And the July contract down 2.20 with a settlement price of 191.80 and a high of 195.50. The low there for the July bean meal at 190.80. Bean oil, May futures, 22.51, the high, the low at 22.29, settlement price at 22.50. They were off, rather up a nickel, 22.48, the settlement price. And the July, a 22.66 high, the low at 22.36, the settlement price at 22.60, and they were up 8 cents. I got that May bean oil contract open price at 22.48. The settlement price was at actually $22.50. We did get the change right. It was up 5 for the day. Just a real quick check on the contract lows. The May at $2.25, so there would be a new contract low today in that. 2.85 is the previous low for the July. It's a new low too. So most of those contracts all making new contract lows. I think that's the second day in a row for several of them. We'll talk to Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities about it at 6 after the hour, 2 o'clock. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, it looks like it was a higher day today for cattle while lean hogs took a hit today. May feeder cattle, 110.10, the high 108.30, the low 110.05, the settlement at up 152.5. August 109.75, the high 108.10, the low, the settlement 109.57.5, up 162.5. September feeder cattle, 108.60, the high, the low 107.15, the settlement 108.55, that finishing up $1.40. June live cattle, 85.60, the high 84.90, the low 85.40, the settlement that up 45. August, 86.35, the high 85.57.5, the low. The final price today, 86.12.5, up 47.5. May lean hog, 79.10, the high 78.10, the low 78.62.5, the final price that down 45. June, 77.55, the high 76.10, the low 76.57.5, the settlement that down 85. July, 78.75, the high 77.25, the low 77.92.5, the settlement that down 97.5. August lean hogs, 76.20 the high, 75.15 the low. The settlement, 75.67.5, that down 55. May pork bellies, 83.95 the high, 82.55 the low, 83.92.5 the settlement, that up 177.5. And a news note here, the Federal Reserve has raised short-term interest rates by 0.25%.